Wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen. You know that this is the finest radio station when it comes to technical difficulties. And true to form, that is what is happening today. And we are going to treat you to the finest difficulties that you've ever heard on your favorite radio station. So right now we are going to start the program actually the correct way and welcome you all, okay? So three, two, one.
Good morning, a brighter day is here. Good morning, may we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go every day, you know, on KSBO Radio.
Good morning, Monterey Bay, Silicon Valley, all the ships at sea. Michael Z welcoming you to hour number one of the KSCO Saturday special. Special today. We're going to be on, as always, for the next 2 hours, bringing us right on up to noontime. And we hope that you will stay with us because we are going to have an intriguing discussion about media, the way it was and the way it is. Stay with us.
Good morning. Now stay right here on the Radio.
Can you remember when media had integrity? I mean media other than KSCO, of course. We all know that with very few exceptions, there is no such thing as true broadcast journalism these days, but plenty of broadcast spin and opinion, more than ever and increasing every day thanks to technology and the internet. At a recent Broadcast Legends meeting, I met a gentleman who served as president of CBS Broadcast Group, which included radio, television, news, records, and more. He was also a broadcast lobbyist for CBS in Washington, D.C. Richard Jenks is a man with an armload of impressive credentials and much to say about media, but come this weekend, he will be inducted into the KSCO Special Hall of Fame. Join us this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on Deliver Past, Present, and Future Power Brokers, right to your ear radio, AM 1080 KSCO. You know, I don't think we've ever inducted anybody into the KSCO Special Hall of Fame. So this is definitely going to be a first. And welcome, Richard Jenks, to KSCO.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. So let's see here. You have been. Tell us when you. How in the world did you get started in network television broadcasting?
Well, that's a long story. I got started in broadcasting as a 16-year-old high school senior in Oakland, California, and I had a weekly high school football program on KROW.
That's right here in the Bay Area.
Right here in the Bay Area under a manager by the name of Scott Weekly, whom some of you may remember. And then I went to the university and I went to war and was away for 4.5 years and came back and went to law school and ended up after law school as with the National Association of Broadcasters in Washington. From there I went to CBS in 1950 in Hollywood. But I really didn't have any real connection with the network until I went to New York in 1965, and ultimately became executive vice president of the television network and then president of the broadcast group, which has been mentioned, included the television network, the radio network, the CBS-owned stations, CBS News, and Cinema Center Films, which you may remember for some very fine films in those years.
Well, if you started with National Association of Broadcasters, which is more of a broadcast lobbyist group,
right?
I guess you're obviously interested in broadcasting, but it sounds like you started more as a lobbyist or someone interested in you know, rules and regulations and so forth and treatment of the broadcast industry.
I think actually, MZ, that I always wanted to be a communications mogul. I thought that law was a good path to that, and I proved that right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, law is a good background for just about anything.
It is, and I didn't care much for it,
uh-huh.
So I got out of it.
Uh-huh.
I went straight.
That's pretty funny. We're talking with Richard Jenks, former president of CBS Broadcast Group. We're talking about media here on the KSCO Saturday Special. If you want to join us, we're going to be opening up the phone lines a little later. Richard and I are going to talk just among ourselves for the first 10 or 15 minutes, but something tells me that we're going to have a lot of phone calls. I could be wrong, but I think we're going to have a lot of phone calls because it's going to be how often do you get to talk to a true media mogul here, and get your questions directly answered here. So, phone numbers for your participation, as always, on the KSCO Saturday Special are 479-1080 or 477-1340. If you want to fax us, the fax number is 475-2967, and if you want to email us during the program, use my email address. That's mz@ksco.com. If you're listening outside the 831 area code, you're going to have to dial 831 to get connected to your favorite radio station, or what will become your favorite radio station, certainly if you listen to us much longer, if you're brand new to us. Well, pardon me. Let's back up to what I would call the golden years of broadcasting. I don't know. I guess Walter Cronkite was long regarded as the most trusted man in America. I mean, I've heard that said by many different people over the years. Now, it's not being said very much these days because I think Walter Cronkite has sort of, in his older years, I guess he's decided to come out and let people know what he thinks, you know. And I was actually surprised to hear that because I thought the man was an amazing journalist. I mean, still probably is, but I was surprised to hear that he weighs in on politics now like he never did before. At least I never remembered that.
Well, yeah, he does. Walter has I know Walter well. My son for a while taught his son how to swim. Walter has opinions, as most newsmen have opinions, and I think most newsmen have very strong political opinions, and they keep them under wraps as much as they can, for fear of offending too many listeners. Hmm. But Walter has always been very much of a pacifist. He is mentioned in one of Helen Caldicott's books as being one who said that if you lay down in front of the enemy's tanks, what could they do?
Mm-hmm.
So he has strong opinions, and as you say, since his retirement, he's been more free to express them. Murrow and Ed Murrow and Cronkite didn't get along too well. Murrow didn't like the idea of a newsman reading stuff that someone else had written. Whereas that became the norm in broadcasting, at least in the network.
I never thought of that. I never thought of that. I went to school in Berkeley, at UC Berkeley, for about a year, and if I would have stayed there, I would have majored in broadcast journalism.
Mm-hmm.
As it was, I was able to major in communications at UC Santa Cruz, but it wasn't a formal major. It was an individual major where I got credit you know, interviewing people like you. I got college credit. But that's when I saw the See It Now episode for the famous McCarthy right. Ed Murrow broadcast. And I was transfixed. I mean, as the whole country was. I'm sure that was a
that was an epic broadcast that yeah. brought down the famous witch hunter, right?
It did, yes.
Uh-huh. And were you in charge then at that time?
No, no. As a matter of fact, Murrow and I didn't cross paths very much. He was still in... When I went to New York... When I went to New York in 65, he had already left CBS. Indeed, he had gone to the U.S. Information Agency in the Kennedy era and had died tragically of cancer, I believe, in 62 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
So during those years, I wasn't even in broadcasting. I was in the motion picture business.
Hmm. But when you were in broadcasting, was it correct to say that it was absolutely a no-no for journalists to be anything but journalists and appear anything other than impartial?
I think that's true. And
if they did, they were disciplined or fired, right?
Well, I don't recall any instance in which we had journalists, some journalists who were more open than others in expressing their views. Howard K. Smith was one of them, probably the most vocal and perhaps the most intelligent of all broadcast journalists that I've known.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't he billed as a commentator more than a reporter or an anchor person? I know he anchored the news, but it just seems to me I remember Howard K. Smith's commentary or something. Am I wrong?
Well, that depends who he was working for. CBS never billed, so far as I know, never billed any newsman as a commentator. With the possible...
Well, I'm thinking of ABC then, because wasn't he with ABC?
Howard K. Smith subsequently went to ABC.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking of. I can't even remember when Howard K. Smith was with CBS, maybe.
No, he was one of Murrow's original 10 boys, so-called.
Uh-huh.
Murrow's boys, and was in Europe with Murrow during the war. He was from Louisiana. Interestingly, a Rhodes Scholar, world-class high hurdler. but he was a wonderful newsman. He was an opinionated person, but he was a very educated person.
And... in any case, it seems to me that jumping ahead to the present, is it my imagination or is the country more polarized now than it's ever been, at least in my life? Now, I'm 54 years old. You're a little bit older than I am. And
well, I don't know about ever. It was probably more polarized during Andrew Jackson's time and more polarized during Lincoln's time. But, during my lifetime, it's certainly more polarized, I think, than it's ever been.
I mean...
There's more talk than there's ever been. That is, say, more on-air talk.
That's true, too.
And you can't gauge polarization as long as people are silent.
Well, since I and my family have owned KSCO, which is a little more than 15 years now, it sure seems to me that more than ever people are absolutely unwilling to discuss politics with anybody but people who agree with them.
Yeah.
And it didn't used to be that way even 10 years ago. Now, maybe that's just my perception, and maybe that's not the way it is, but I think it's curious. I've seen... through the last presidential election, I observed people who have been friends for life become enemies over Bush versus Kerry. I mean, it just...
I think that's true, although, we all know that it's always been an unwritten rule that one shouldn't, at least at the dinner table, discuss politics or religion. So it's obviously always been productive of rancor and anger and so forth. But I think maybe you're right that more so now, and I don't know why more so now, except for the intense passions aroused by the war.
I guess prior to the Iraqi War, I don't remember it being this bad. And I can remember the Vietnam War, and of course passions were very high then. And I was very much an anti-war. I wouldn't call myself activist. I was against the war, as most young people, college-age people, were back then. But I wasn't an activist, and I would certainly talk with people and wouldn't instantly despise or hate or not talk to somebody who was from a different perspective.
Yeah, well, I for example, I enjoy political discussion, and I prize friends who will discuss politics and religion and any other subject with me. But you're right, there are a lot of people who won't. And I think that's their loss. Now, of course, on radio and television, since the Fairness Doctrine was eliminated, you had a great flowering of opinion by commentators. And I think this has been a very good change. You never had on broadcasting before then anything comparable to the magazines of opinion. The Nation, the New Republic, Commentary, the National Review. None of those magazines would entertain people of the opposite political faith. And generally speaking now, opinion is one-sided.
Right. Let's talk about the Fairness Doctrine a little bit, okay? That's a fascinating subject that we've never really talked about in great detail on this station, and I can't think of a better person to begin a discussion on the Fairness Doctrine than yourself. The Fairness Doctrine basically ordered, and it was an FCC ordered a rule that I'm going to ask you, what was it? You can tell better than I can.
The idea was that in order to conform to the underlying statute, a broadcaster had to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was thought to flow from that he should be sure that on his station that views pro and con on significant public issues be balanced.
Yes.
And as a result, there was very little discussion of significant public issues by commentators on television. There was news about them, but there was not opinion about them. And as a result, we had no broadcast equivalent of the opinion magazines, which on the left and right flourished and have flourished in America for many years. The New Republic, for example, started, 80 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The Nation, further back than that. Those magazines wouldn't abide by a federal agency and wouldn't have to abide by a federal agency telling them they weren't fair. They're not,
because they're not licensed, right?
They're not licensed by the government. So when the Fairness Doctrine was withdrawn...
And why was it withdrawn? Excuse me, didn't mean to interrupt.
Why was it? Well, yeah. It was withdrawn because in the late 70s, the FCC decided that in a competitive situation in which you had 40, 50, 60 radio stations in the same market, that it was silly to tell each of them that they had to be fair when the net result of all these competing entities would result in fairness.
Right.
And that seemed to me to make sense. And usually in most of those markets, there was by then only one newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And nobody telling it to be fair.
Yes. And... I guess, given the choice, any broadcaster is going to prefer to be regulated less than regulated more. Right?
So. I assume so, right up to the point where he thinks that abiding by the rules that the government has laid down will make his investment more secure than by fighting them.
Right. And that happened during the Reagan administration, no? The dropping of the Fairness Doctrine, am I right?
Well, what happened was that the FCC dropped it by changing its interpretation. Then the Congress, a liberal Democratic Congress majority, sought to restore it and passed a bill
recently,
to that effect.
Much more recently, right? Or are you talking about way back? Because I wasn't paying attention.
No, this was in the early 80s,
okay.
And Reagan vetoed that bill. So
I gotcha.
In other words, you had a federal agency relaxing and eliminating the doctrine. You had a Congress responding to that by trying to restore it, and then a conservative president vetoing the restoration.
Thanks for correcting that in my brain here, yeah. because I had thought that it was almost a product of the Reagan administration, the dropping of the Fairness Doctrine. Yeah. So, and that's not the way it was at all.
No, it antedated the Reagan administration.
Now, I can recall just in the 15 or so years that I've been a licensed broadcaster that, it seems to me about 10 or 12 years ago, there was yet another move on the part of liberal Democrats to force, because of the extreme popularity of the conservative talk host Rush Limbaugh. I mean, that was the reason that was cited for the reinstatement of the Fairness Doctrine, because he had become so powerful and so influential. Yeah, it would have been like after the 1994 midterm elections, that where there was a Republican sweep, not nearly as much as the most recent Republican sweep, but it was a Republican sweep, and as a result, there was a backlash on the part of Democrats to reinstate the Fairness Doctrine. So that somehow that could result in them getting back more of their power.
Yeah, the Democrats obviously did want the doctrine restored because of the effectiveness of the conservative talk.
Why do you think conservative talk radio sells and liberal talk radio doesn't? And that's what I found to be the case with our own personal experience. We have a 1,000 watt station, our sister station KOMY, that about 9 or 10 months ago we switched over to predominantly liberal talk radio with Air America Radio Network, which has received more publicity than any business I can remember. You know, for well over a year before it actually even launched, and we have found that though we the audience research data that we've seen shows that there are a lot of people listening, and we've gotten a lot of thank yous in our emails and our in our phone calls and letters and so forth, but the notion of advertising on liberal talk radio is foreign to businesses. They just won't do it.
Well, that's odd to me, because you'd be surprised. I think most people would be surprised at how many liberals there are in the business community.
Yeah,
I would say certainly that was true in the broadcasting corporations. There were more liberals than there were conservatives, but that's true of I think a lot of the knowledge industries, the computer industry, and so forth. As to why conservative talk radio has generally fared better than liberal talk radio, I think it's because the perceived need for it is more intense. A conservative is engulfed in blue state ideas across the ambit of the most powerful newspapers and magazines, whereas a liberal's need for that information is filled by many media. So the conservative feels a lack in the media he sees around him, and therefore he is drawn by talk radio, which for the first time, in his view, approximates opinions that he himself has. Mm-hmm. And after all, people listen to other people's opinion mainly because they hope it will reinforce and embellish and add to their own preconceived opinions.
Yeah, I'm sure that's
they
true.
Don't listen to opinion to be challenged by opponents. Mm-hmm. And they never have. If you subscribe to The Nation, you don't subscribe to the National Review. Mm-hmm. And vice versa.
I guess I'm really an odd duck, because I'm interested in all points of view.
Yeah.
You know, civil discussion of all points of view. And if it gets a little spicy, that's fine too. Yeah. Pardon me. You're listening to the KSCO Saturday Special. We have special guest Richard Jenks, former president of CBS Broadcast Group, and he is here with us, and we're having a discussion about media, the Fairness Doctrine, and so forth, and we will be opening the phone lines in just a few moments, so if you have some questions or some comments, you might want to start calling 479-1080 or 477-1340, and we'll get you on the air here. If you want to send an email, the address is mz@ksco.com. It's AM 1080 KSCO. My name is MZ, and again, my guest is Richard Jenks. So, the liberal media. Is the liberal media a real thing? Do you think the news media in particular, do you think that skews liberal?
Yeah, the most powerful purveyors of liberal opinion in the country in the print press are the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Los Angeles Times. And there aren't very many major newspapers which are of a Republican editorial viewpoint, except for the Wall Street Journal. Now, interestingly enough, a UCLA professor about 2 months ago who had completed a study with another professor for several years of fairness in news concluded that in its news columns, the Wall Street Journal was more liberal, if you please, than the New York Times. In its editorial columns, of course, the Wall Street Journal is very conservative by contemporary standards. So there is, and there should be that difference. I mean, news should, on any medium, be straightforward and neutral as much as possible.
Right.
And I think that the journal achieves that.
Do you have an opinion about the networks, about the television networks and their news these days?
Not anymore, MZ, because I'm not much of a consumer of commercial network news.
Why is that?
Well, my on-air news is satisfied from two sources. One, from the PBS NewsHour with Jim Lehrer for an hour each weekday evening. And secondly, by a whole array of cable television news and opinion outlets, CNN, MSNBC.
Well, let's include those. Let's include those in the mainstream then, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Among all of those, so it sounds like you for your news, you watch Lehrer. I was going to say Lehrer McNeil, but McNeil isn't there anymore. So so you watch Lehrer and you watch CNN?
I watch CNN. I watch whichever of the cable news programs is not currently airing a commercial.
Oh, okay.
And that sounds hostile, but sorry about that. I subscribe to three newspapers.
Uh-huh.
I subscribe to three or four opinion magazines. So I am a news groupie.
Right. Okay, well, we're gonna take our first call. It's Mark from Felton. I want to make sure Jay has the pot 10 all the way up here, because otherwise we're not going to be able to hear Mark. But we can try to put him on the air right now and see if we can welcome Mark from Felton to the KSCO Saturday Special. You're on, Mark. Hello.
Good morning, Michael.
Hey,
how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Nice program this morning.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Jenks.
Good morning.
Terrific to hear from you. The question I had was in regards to the early, like the golden age of broadcasting, and Merle seems to get a lot of attention in that regard, but there's two people that really come to mind when I think about that period of time. Douglas Edwards is one of them, and who I considered a real monster in broadcast at that time was Paul Manning, who you never really hear of anything of these days, or any history about what happened in regard to his contribution.
I never have heard of him.
Paul Manning wrote a very interesting book called Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and I think it's out of publication now, but he was a real monster in the industry. He was a tail gunner during World War II, and he was there in London and broadcasting around the same time as Merle. So I'll take my answer off the air, but I'd like to hear your guest comment on that. Thanks.
Well, I don't really know anything about Paul Manning. I've heard the name. The old-time broadcasters that were important immediately prior to World War II were Lowell Thomas and Boak Carter. And Carter was on CBS as part of a total package because, you know, Bill Paley at that time was willing to accept a proposal from any sponsor. And Boak broadcast from his home in Philadelphia and made the mistake of approving of Hitler's takeover of Austria, which led to the termination of his career. Lowell Thomas I knew briefly and I thought was an entertaining broadcaster, but not much of a newsman. But I really know nothing about Paul Manning, and I'll try to read the book you recommend.
Okay, that's great. So this is the KSCO Saturday special. So you obviously knew Murrow, right?
Yeah.
But not real well.
I mean, not real well, no.
At the Broadcast Legends meeting, there was... he was much closer to someone that you were closer to at the... forget who that was.
Yeah.
Who was that? Who was that at the...
Oh, you're thinking of Eric Severide.
Oh, okay.
Eric
right.
Severide was a close friend of mine and was also, of course, a close friend of Murrow's and one of the first people Ed Murrow chose.
Right. And you were... during the See It Now program... You were with CBS, right? But not
yeah.
But not the president.
I was, right.
Oh, you were the president?
Okay. No, I was with CBS, but I wasn't president.
Right. And what was it like that night when that was broadcast? Because it just must have been electric. I mean, everybody must have had butterflies in their stomach about should we be doing this? And
well, I think the news people were very enthusiastic about doing it. The corporation was very concerned, I think, that it might lose major sponsors. After all, we were covering Mr. McCarthy every night in the regular news. It wasn't as if we'd neglected him. Oddly enough, there were many people in the liberal press community that thought that the Murrow broadcast came far too late in the game.
Mm.
Dorothy Schiff, who ran the New York Post at that time... did a little editorial in which she said, welcome on board, Mr. Murrow. Glad to have you with the rest of us now.
Oh.
So it wasn't altogether clear at that time that CBS was in the forefront of dealing with Senator McCarthy.
And after that broadcast...
After that, we became associated with the greatest opposition to McCarthy.
Yeah, because that's what everybody credits CBS with bringing him down.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question about that, is there?
I don't think there's any question that CBS destroyed him, although I think that there were many people, including President Eisenhower, who thought that he would self-destruct anyway if we just let him alone.
What do you think about that? That's probably true.
That's probably true. He was uh-huh. He was a hard act to take. He was... So obviously, an intellectual thug.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, we have another caller here. And by the way, if you want to call, 479-1080, don't be bashful. I mean, Richard does not bite, and neither do I. It's 479-1080, 477-1340, that will connect you to KSCO on the Saturday special with MZ and special guest here. If you want to fax us, it's 475-2967. Jay will check up front to see the faxes coming in here, and he will read them. Let's get back to the phone lines. Oh, yeah, and of course, the email, mz@ksco.com. Carmen in Santa Cruz is next up about changes in the media over the years. Carmen, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. Just wanted to talk a little bit. I watched C-SPAN. You know, I used to go to work real early in the morning, so I got used to, when I retired, I just used to wake up at 4, so the first thing I turned on would be C-SPAN. Now, this is since 85. What a change. I get to the point where I can't hardly stand it was the call-in program. I guess you guys are familiar with it. Anyway, I can't stand the people that are calling any. I never heard or listened to so many mean-spirited people that call in anymore. I mean, they're each trying to outdo themselves of how nasty they can be. So and I think the media's gotten in the sort of going along with the rest of the public. They're just...
You mean to fan the flames like I do myself sometimes?
Well, we enjoy that. I mean, it'd be terrible if we all had to agree with one another. You
uh-huh.
know, but I mean, why be so nasty? Why can't you call and tell people and discuss things? I don't care which side you're on, because that's the only way you're going to learn. You're not going to learn talking to people that think the same way you do. You've got to get in someone else's ideas. And you're not getting that on C-SPAN of all places. I mean, where are you going to go? CNN or or these other ones, you're not going to get an unbiased. That's as about unbiased as you can get when you turn on C-SPAN, but that's getting ridiculous. It's sad. It's really sad.
Okay. Well, let's see what Richard has to say.
Well, I agree with you. And the trouble is that productive discussion demands some degree of manners. And we have a couple of generations of people who no longer believe in manners.
And World War II, so you know where I'm coming from.
And if you follow the blogging situation, you'll find that in blogs, people completely let themselves go in rants. And indeed, a columnist the other day used the term disinhibition to describe blogs. That they encourage people to cut loose of all their personal and political inhibitions and to be angry and vengeful and destructive in discussing things.
You know, I would say go to a psychiatrist, you know, and get that, not to expose, make people like me exposed to all your hatefulness and, or disgust or whatever, you know.
Right.
And that's where I'm coming from. I don't, the media, of course, I don't even want to get into that. Because I think they're biased, so anyway.
Okay,
that's
Carmen.
Another story. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call to the Saturday special. It's 10:42. We got about 17 more minutes remaining in hour number one of the Saturday special, but we will be on right up until noontime. We have one open line at 479-1080, a couple, three other open lines at 477-1340. Our next caller will be Scott in Santa Cruz. Scott, you're on the air on KSCO.
Hi, MZ. Hey. Nice to talk to you. I wasn't aware you went to UCSC and Berkeley. I bet you have a few good stories.
Yeah, a lot.
But I have a question for Richard, please.
Sure.
I kind of, like, when I turn on the news, I kind of get, like, when you get, like, is Britney pregnant again? Or the greatest cooking tips? Or the makeover things? You know, and I just want to watch the news about the world and stuff. And it just seems to be more of that lately. I just wanted to know what he thought about that.
Well, there's no doubt that there's a whole segment of the public, Scott, that is most interested in following the lives and foibles of celebrities.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, due to that is reflected by the success of People magazine, which produces much, much more income for Time Inc. than Time does, for example.
That's kind of sad.
But I don't know how you get people off the celebrity kick.
Yeah.
It would be nice. You know, we've had a whole year on the news media, on the cable news media, of dealing with one unfortunate young woman who disappeared on a Caribbean island.
All right.
In the past, you didn't have that kind of exhaustive and tiresome news coverage.
That's true. That is true. Huh.
Why is that? I mean, why is it different now? Why can it's obviously what the people want, or they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So are people stupid or what?
No. Well, to be blunt, many people are vulgar, and I use that in the dictionary sense.
Vulgar.
Of being members of the common herd. That makes me sound like an elitist, but the fact of the matter is. that if it weren't for the influence of the state and the church, people would be a great deal more vulgar than they are.
Well, I also wonder, though, if somebody is working 9 to 5 and they're just exhausted and they've been dealing with problems all day, maybe that's what they just want, is just mindless news, you know, just entertainment. Just, I don't know. That's just something I thought of.
Well, I think you're on the right track, Scott, and I don't... You know, I will say this, in media today, you've got a tremendous menu, like sometimes you see at some restaurants, so many offerings that you really can pick your way through the minefield and find people who have the kinds of minds and souls that you admire, but you kind of got to be a careful shopper.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, guys.
Scott, thank you for calling the Saturday special. Okay, here comes... The Observer, regarding Sartre. Who is The Observer? Who is this?
Michael, good morning.
Oh, hi there.
And how are you?
Good.
Gentlemen, who coined the word news?
I don't know.
That's a good question to which there's no good answer.
I wonder, though, back in the days of Sarnoff and that era, what do you think the Sarnoff and the Paleys would say about public access to the airwaves, either on radio or television?
You mean public access in the sense of call-in?
We have here,
non-commercial, I think you're talking about, right, Observer?
You're not familiar with the public access?
Now I know what you're talking about. You're talking about
cable TV,
the
franchises.
Opportunity of that cable channels offer for community groups and so forth to have spokesmen on the air.
Not just that. Are you familiar with the local situation and the idea that we have here something that's really unknown in most communities, and that is a cable television, three channels on the cable system, written into the charter of the county and the city, that your neighbor can go down to the station, and then rather than having the elitists run the commentary or the programming, that actually people can go and do not just blogging on the internet, but the use of, so you're not really familiar with public access. I wonder what Sarnoff or Paley or those guys or Edward R. Murrow or any of those people in the early days might have, how they would view this public access idea.
Well, now that I fully understand what you mean by it, I am familiar with it. One of my earliest appearances on radio occurred on a station WNYC, the station owned by New York City. And that purported to be a public access channel open to anybody who had opinions. And I don't object to that. I think that's fine. I think overall, I prefer professionals giving me my news rather than amateurs. But I also want to hear the voice of the people.
Okay. Well, Observer, we want to thank you for your call to the Saturday special. We're going to go to our next caller. That would be Krishna in Santa Cruz. Krishna, you're on the air.
Good morning, Michael.
Hey there.
And your wonderful guest.
Oh, great. Well, what's on? What's on?
What is on? I wanted to find out what he thinks about a listener like me and how many there are like me. For instance, I listen to NPR all day long. And then when I've had a surfeit of that, I will listen to Rush Limbaugh for a while. And I always listen to the Saturday morning when you're hosting it. And I will, on TV, I go to Fox, I go to CNN, I go to MSNBC a lot. What kind of listener is that? Now, I am a conservative, but I love listening to NPR, and I'm screaming and yelling, but they do wonderful programming.
Well,
it's because they have lots of time they give to it.
Well, it sounds to me as if you love to acquire information, and you're the best kind of listener because you're willing to listen to different types of programs and different types of political opinions, so I can't say enough about that. There ought to be more of you.
You mean there isn't?
Come on, Krishna, you know that.
There isn't? No, you tell me. Okay, I understand when the gentleman says that your average person is vulgar. I am deeply vulgar. Because I
love
enjoy
that
it
word.
So deeply.
I'm going to start using it.
I enjoy it so deeply. I love, for instance, you know, it changed my life, Phil Henry coming on the airwaves.
Yeah.
Changed my life. He is deeply vulgar, but it is so wonderful to listen to him after I've had maybe 8 hours of the misery from the left.
Do you know who we're talking about, who Krishna's talking about, Phil Hendry? Phil Hendry, he's syndicated by Clear Channel, by Premier, same company that has Rush Limbaugh, and we carry him. It isn't even live. It's like 21 hours delayed. During our afternoon drive time period on KSCO.
Yeah.
And he's a person who is really a comic genius. He talks to himself. He has these set up guests on these outrageous situations that if people don't realize that they're being had, they get on the telephone, they call the radio station, they call us and complain, how can we have this garbage on the air right now? And we tell them, hey, wait a minute. Don't you realize the whole thing is just all in fun, and it's really the host talking to himself, and he has many different voices. And as soon as people find that out, their rancor metamorphoses into delight, and it becomes their favorite program.
And look, just listening to you, Michael, talking about him makes me laugh. You can imagine.
Right.
You know, I also have, as far as journals go, news journals, we take the Wall Street Journal, we have Natural History, we have The Economist, we have the Atlantic Monthly. So reading all of this, I think what I think like is possibly what original Democrats were like. They were rational people, essentially.
I couldn't applaud you more. I think, you know, Andy Rooney on 60 Minutes on CBS is another person who delves into what might be called common vulgarity without being obscene. On the other hand, at the other pole, you had someone like Howard Stern, whose vulgarity is so magnificent that...
Now, I don't understand Stern.
People may not...
I understand Phil Henry very well, but I do not understand Stern.
Well, you don't understand his popularity, you mean?
Yes, I don't. Uh-huh. I don't get his wit. Uh-huh. I don't, because I think it is... it's much less spicy than Phil Henry. Phil Henry really delves into the very peculiar things about people rather than your mundane vulgarity.
Well, there has been much talk lately about us putting Michael Savage in live instead of Phil Henry 21 hours delayed. And you remember that. In fact, Phil Henry himself caught wind of that on our web poll that we did, and he talked about it on his national program, and he said very uncomplimentary things about Michael Savage.
Michael Savage is strange. I in the beginning I thought he was straight, but there's something wrong with this man. I think he is... maybe he's akin to McCarthy. I don't know. There's something wrong with that man.
Well, anyhow.
I would not like to hear Michael Savage at all.
I wish to thank you for your call to the Saturday special.
Thank you very much for your Saturday morning, as usual, Michael.
Okay, appreciate the kind words. Here's Tony in Salinas. You're on the air on KSCO, Tony.
MZ, thank you so much for your radio stations. I'm a loyal listener, have been for years. My comment about Michael Savage, who I started listening to years ago, and I don't listen to him anymore, but there's a difference between the message and the messenger. Michael Savage has been more right than he has been wrong about the political climate. But my question is this. I'd like to know your honored guest's opinion about the fervor now going on in a discussion about the difference between conservative radio and liberal radio. And I consider radio like your radio stations, I consider you subscription radio. If I don't like it, I don't listen. If I don't listen, you don't get sponsors. Pure and simple.
Yeah.
Air America, for example, I listen to them, and they have a very poor product. But I'm loyal to them. I'm thinking about buying an ad to keep them around so people can see how absurd they are.
Well, do it quick already, Tony. Jeez.
I'd like to know what I call subscription radio. There seems to be a movement that since the liberals don't have a message that resonates with the people, they also cannot find sponsors to carry the message. It looks like they're trying to attack free radio, as I call it, subscription radio.
Did you hear Limbaugh talking about it a few months ago?
Yeah, I mean, in the paper, too.
Did you hear him talking about us? A guy, a nice guy in Santa Cruz, and I know the guy, he's amazed. He doesn't understand why he can't sell any advertising on the liberal talk radio. Now, his other station is led by me, and I'm sold out all the time. He doesn't understand that it's not about about business or commerce. It's about supporting the cause.
It's about making money. That's what it's about. You don't make any money, Michael, and you go away.
Yeah.
And that would be very sad.
Yeah.
So anyway, I would like to get a comment about the status of subscription broadcasting, as I call it.
That's a subject that I'm afraid I don't know anything about. I have to say that I live in Marin County, where there are more liberals than there are voters.
and
it is, if you live in a...
Chicago, too.
If you live in a community like that, you really don't need to listen to a liberal radio station because you can just talk over the back fence to your liberal neighbor.
Yeah, well, what I'm talking about is that Air America, several months ago, started talking about how unfair the situation was, and finally somebody put their money where their mouth was. And but I believe that it's a matter that if the product's good, people will buy it. People will sponsor it. And I don't think that companies want to sponsor things by ideology unless it's going to make them money.
And that's, okay.
That's the way I look at it.
And Tony, thank you very much for your call to the Saturday special.
I'm going to buy an ad in Air America in the morning. We got to keep them around to remind people. They really resonate. And
once you come and do the ad, and that'll be the purpose of your ad, to tell people that they better start anteing up or ponying up or it's going to go away.
You know, I did
right?
Yeah, but they represent very well what the Democrat Party leadership is today. Okay? And so that's why they're interesting to listen to. They truly are representative of how the Democrats think. And there isn't one of them that I know of, the leaders, that have have a disingenuous way of spinning their lifetime.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Michael Zwerman.
Thank you very much, Tony and Salinas. Hey, Jay, are you there? Are you there at the controls, Jay? Are you picking up
faxes
or something? Anyhow, I guess he's not there, so we'll run the commercials a little later on here. I guess we'll double up next hour here. But our next caller will be Harold in Aptos. You're on the air, Harold.
This is MZ, the communications mogul of Santa Cruz County.
Big deal, yeah.
Okay, and your guest. Let me get his name right. What's his name?
Richard Jenks.
Mr. Jenks.
Yes.
Okay, you can tell us about how his name has been teased about for a long time. I'm sure he has some jokes on that.
Now, Harold.
No, that's my attempt at a joke. Now, you did say you trusted Walter Cronkite, and he was the Uncle Walter and all that. But if I remember those times, Huntley Brinkley were the most trusted news team until one of them developed, I guess, cancer and died. You remember that guess?
I certainly do, yeah.
Okay, what do you think about Huntley Brinkley? Wasn't that a smooth team that you did trust before Cronkite?
I did, yes, and I knew Huntley slightly because before he went to NBC with Huntley Brinkley, he worked on the CBS radio station in Los Angeles, which is where at that time I worked.
Yes.
Oh.
So I thought Chet was a fine broadcaster. As to comparing him with Cronkite or anybody else, I don't know. They were all good.
Okay, I'm going to try to shoot through the 50s because I'm a historian.
Yeah, Harold, we only got about 40 seconds, so you got to move
it. Could
you
hold me on after the news then?
Yeah, it'll be a while. But go ahead. Go ahead and ask your question.
The second one then. Okay, let's get to this one here. I want to know what you think about out there in this world today, there's a religion, Islam, that is causing a lot of trouble. We're at war with them. Hello?
Yes.
Okay, I'm getting a lot of clicks. But what I want to know, Islam has this religious side to them, and they look at our movies, and our worst movies all on the media today is by Quentin Tarantino, and I want to know what he thinks about Quentin Tarantino.
We're going to have to hold you over until well into next hour. We'll do that here. This is KSCO Santa Cruz. It's the Saturday special. Back in 6 minutes with more. Stay with us. Here's Fox News.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa Carton.
63.
Jay, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, so that means you should be able to hear the official Hour 2 Open jingle. And we're going to be doing now is the time for the tease, okay? For those of you who are just chomping at the bit to hear Kay's latest commentary, that'll be coming up in the next 5 or 10 minutes, okay? And from this particular location. So right now, here is the beginning of hour number 2, officially.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby. But I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
you get to talk to a real live president of a major network here in broadcasting. Well, that's what we're doing today.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSEO Radio. Bye.
And that gentleman's name is Richard Jenks. He was the former president. He is the former president of CBS Broadcast Group, which included radio, television, records. What else? What else, Richard? I got to get your mic back on here. What else did it include?
Well, it includes Cinema Center Films, which produced feature-length motion pictures like The Boys in the Band, for example. It did not include records. That was a whole separate thing.
Now I feel like a fool here because I put that in the promo that was running for the last few days.
All right, I wouldn't mind being in charge of the records.
Okay, great. If you want to give us a call, 479-1080 is the phone number to call, or 477-1340. Email us, the address is mz@ksco.com, mz@ksco.com. And if you want to fax us, it's 475-2967. Jay, I don't know if you've been up at the front to catch any of the faxes, but if we have any, chime in here, please, and let me know, and then we'll have you read the faxes on the air here. But in the meantime, let's go back to the telephones. I think we were, before we went to the break, we were talking with Harold and Aptos, and we would like to get some other callers at 479-1080 or 477-1340. We do have open lines, so call now if you want to. Here's Harold. You're on the air, Harold.
Hello.
You're back. Hi.
Hi. Okay, now, I did want to ask him what he thought about William Randolph, because, as you know, he was the first big-time media mogul here that controlled all the newspapers in the country.
William Randolph Click? I think you mean, yeah, okay.
Yeah, her. Well, good Lord, there were other big media moguls. Joseph Pulitzer was one of them. Adolph Ox of the New York Times. Hearst was a thought by many to be partially responsible for the Spanish-American War. He was a pretty unprincipled type. He was a supporter of Senator McCarthy, of course. He had a wonderful, civic-spirited mother who was the greatest benefactor of the young University of California. I don't know that we can credit him with that. But he was, when I was a boy in the Bay Area, there was, of course, a Hearst newspaper in San Francisco, the Examiner. There was also the Call Bulletin in San Francisco, a Hearst newspaper. And there was the Post Inquirer, I believe, in Oakland. So to the extent that his activities resulted in more different sources of newspaper news, that was fine. He, as a young person, always wanted to own a newspaper, and his mother made that possible.
Hello?
Who's that?
This is Bob Lister.
How did you get on?
I don't know. I just called in and he sent me on. Did you want me to hang up?
No, I don't want you to hang up. Just go ahead and ask. But it's so funny because I didn't select, but that's okay. Go ahead, Bob. You're on.
Well, first off, I want to say this is one of the best programs I've ever heard on your station.
Well, we did it all for you.
You've made my day, as the great Clint Eastwood would say.
Good.
Anyway, Mr. Jenks?
Yes?
I'm with you. I listen to Jim Lehrer all the time myself. It's one of the most objective TV programs I've ever heard. And to me, I like it because they get the advertising over at the beginning and get to the meat of the subject. So anyway, that's the first thing I wanted to say to you.
I should probably let Richard know that you are my high school government teacher from many years ago. Okay? This is Bob Lister. He's just a prince of a guy.
This whole thing is incestuous.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm related to MZ yet, although I've known his family for years, both, and been involved with him in many different areas. Right now, I can't read printed material because I have macular degeneration, so I can't watch television and listen to the radio. And like I said, I like Tim Lehrer. And
well, I think your taste is very good. Lehrer and McNeil, whom I knew and corresponded with, are wonderful people.
Well, I wanted to say a couple of other things if I could, so be patient with me, Mike.
Go ahead, Bob.
I go back for years while I was listening to the radio, Edward R. Murrow, etc. Do you remember a broadcaster called Fulton Lewis and another one called H.B. Kaltenborn?
Indeed, I do.
I remember Fulton Lewis was the most one of the most conservative opinionated commentators I've ever heard. He was pro Joe McCarthy, and he used to laud Joe McCarthy and Senator Pat McCarran.
Yeah.
And other very conservative commentators. So they didn't hesitate at that time to state their opinions. Would you agree?
I agree. Another one was Westbrook Pegler, and of course Walter Winchell was of the same stripe.
I remember both of those people. Westbrook Pegler was a case by himself. Also, H.B. Kaltenborn, do you recall President Harry Truman imitating him after the 1948 election?
Right.
But when H.V. Kaltenborn predicted that Dewey would win, and he said so as soon as the rural vote came in, and then Truman got up in front of his supporters and imitated H.V. Kaltenborn in that very precise voice that he had.
Yeah, Kaltenborn was the biggest name in CBS News before Ed Murrow came along.
He certainly was, and I remember him very vividly.
Yeah, I'm surprised his name didn't come up before now. I was trying to remember that name. Yeah.
Well, another one, Mr. Jenks, is Chet Huntley before they had Huntley Brinkley. Chet Huntley was one of the first people to attack McCarthy, I believe, even before Ed Murrow did on his radio broadcast.
Well, yes, he was. I must say, of the two of them, I thought Brinkley was a more interesting man and wrote a first-rate book about his career.
I agree with you. You also mentioned, at the beginning of the show today, Mike, you mentioned the fact that there seems to be more polarization today. By the way, I listen to Rush Limbaugh and the other commentators. Apparently, Air America has the answer to Rush Limbaugh with a guy called Ed Schultz. Have you ever heard of him, Mike?
No, it's not Air America, but I know, yes, I have heard of him.
In fact, when I listen to him sometimes, I'm deaf in one ear, but he sounds very much like Rush Limbaugh when he talks.
He looks like him, too.
Yes, he does. I saw him interviewed once on Larry King. There's all kinds of polarization going on during...
Yeah, why do you think that is the way it is, Bob?
I was going to mention way back in the 30s you found the same thing. People either hated FDR or they loved FDR. I can remember in high school of the arguments we used to have over that. At that time, I was very much against FDR, and I was a staunch Republican. I've changed since then, as you probably know.
Hey, what changed you?
Well, going out and trying to make a living, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that Harry Truman basically changed me more than anybody else. When he got out and he railed against the Taft-Hartley Act, and he's pro-union. I've always been a pro-union person. And...
Well, you know, that all three of us here who are on the air right now started out from a different political
perspective.
Yeah. Affiliation, I guess, is the better word here. I was a Democrat until probably 7 or 8 years ago. And finally, I don't particularly care for the Republicans. I am a registered Republican now. But it's because I think more like a Republican than I do a Democrat, but I'm probably more of an independent than anything else. It sounds like Richard was originally a Democrat who turned into a Republican as well, and you're the other way around.
Well, I can still communicate with certain individuals who disagree with me politically, like yourself. And there's a caller called Westside Al Bailey, whom I don't agree with on national issues and some international issues. We have a very good relationship because he's very intelligent and doesn't get personal about it. So there are people that you can listen to and talk to and communicate with. And it's too bad that there aren't more people like this, that you don't have to agree with everything a person says. And when you get into politics, when you vote for somebody, you got to remember that you're voting for a political office, not your, the person is running for political office, not for sainthood.
Yes.
And as a political activist, which I've been in the past, as you know, there are no friends or enemies in politics. There are just temporary alliances.
The parties, of course, have changed positions. My Democratic Party left me. My people I admired in the Democratic Party were Senator Moynihan, Scoop Jackson of Washington, and Hubert Humphrey, father of the Civil Rights Act.
Hubert Humphrey was one of my idols when I heard him as mayor of Minneapolis. He was great. And there are some good Republicans, too, like this guy Chuck Hagel from Nebraska, and the two women senators from Maine. Those are the kinds of Republicans that I respect. And Pete McCloskey, of course, too.
Yeah, I know Pete.
He's come to Santa Cruz several times. But I really appreciate your allowing me to speak this morning, Michael.
Okay, Bob. Well, it's always a pleasure to hear from you. You take care, okay?
Don't let your meatloaf.
Don't yet let yours either, okay? Here's a... Live Oak Bob. That was Soquel Bob. Here's Live Oak Bob. You're on.
Yeah, good morning, Richard. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Richard, I don't watch TV anymore for my news, and I don't listen to it on the radio either for one reason. They leave me hanging. They leave the verbs out, so they speak in introductory clauses. Why are they doing that?
Gee, I don't know that I'm capable of answering that. Newspeak is, another language.
It's awful. The children, what are the children supposed to do? Are sitting there watching the evening news, and they keep leaving out the is and the are and the was, and they're speaking in clauses and stuff like that. I wouldn't let my children listen to the news.
Yeah, I wish that were the worst thing that was available for children. On television or radio.
Well, I agree with that.
We now have MySpace where they can commune with all sorts of degenerates at will. We've long had MTV, which is soft porn. If I were a parent now of young children, as I was once, I don't know that I'd allow them to look at the internet in their own room.
Sorry, I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either, I've never had a problem. I've only had a computer for 2.5 years. I've never had a problem because I don't Google interesting questions, and so I never get dirty spam or anything like that. But it's been bothering me for some time, and I just cannot stand to watch any of the news. I'll try Jim Lehrer because your recommendation, and see, maybe he's not doing that.
Well, I think you'd enjoy, Lara. So many news programs, especially on the three networks, ultimately resulted in one newsman interviewing another. Whereas on Lara, on most big issues, he has experts. They may be statesmen or they may be scientists who are on both sides of an issue, and he interrogates them, and you learn something.
So he's not just giving a quick speak. He's they're very good. Okay.
No, they'll spend, they'll spend 10 or 15 minutes on the same subject.
Good. Thank you very much. I'll try that.
Good
and I did try Phil Hendry on Mike's recommendation, and I love him. Although I bit at first. I was slamming my car door, screaming at the radio, the whole works, until I understood what Phil was up to, and I just looked forward every afternoon to listening to Phil Hendry.
You figured it out? No one told you? He tells the audience himself from time to time.
Right. No, I figured it out because of similarities between the people in statements that he would make or phrases he would use, and I finally figured it out. And I just really enjoy it.
Right. Let me, if I may, if MZ will permit me, make a postscript to this. I think the worst thing about television for children is not so much the message that they get from watching it, but the fact that they're watching it at all. Human beings were not meant to be entertained all the time. There are other things in life.
I entertained myself when I was growing up. I was never bored.
There was an unfortunate young man, a 13-year-old, who just 3 or 4 days ago was killed by a train south of San Francisco. And he didn't hear the locomotive. And why didn't he hear it? He didn't hear it because his iPod was on. He was listening to music. Now, that is a kind of a parable.
Right.
What else are we missing in all sorts of areas because we choose to be entertained instead?
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't like that.
What other locomotives are we not hearing?
Well, okay, good point, but I also want to bring up the fact that when you call it iPod, I mean, that's the general term for what I call portable on-demand media.
Right. Yeah.
And I think people are just now beginning to awaken to the fact that iPods or portable media players can be utilized as time shift devices to learn things,
right,
not just to be entertained.
Right. Yeah,
oh, no doubt about it. And if you're in your doctor's office and the best thing you have available to you are a two-year-old supply of People magazines and a plaster cast of someone's lower spine, it's maybe very handy to use a micro viewing device to be entertained or educated.
Right. Well, thank you very much. I'll let you go on to the next person.
Thank you for calling. We have a it's too long a thing about vulgar here, but well, all right, we'll read. MZ, below is a definition of for the word vulgar, since you like it so much. That's from Vernon Cube. One, crudely indecent. Two, deficient in taste, delicacy, or refinement. B, marked by a lack of good breeding, or boorish. See synonyms at common. Let's see here. Offensively excessive in self-display or expenditure, ostentatious, the huge vulgar houses and cars of the newly rich. Now here's another definition. Spoken by or expressed in language spoken by common people, vernacular, the technical and vulgar names for animal species. And then definition number four is of or associated with the great masses of people, common. Okay, thank you, Vernon. That added to the program, definitely. Now, let's see. Ray Williams says, and the subject says, MZ, let your guest talk, Richard Jenks. We want to hear his wealth of info, not the callers. Tell us some juicy stuff about CBS from his days. Also, details on how CBS brought down McCarthy, not your uh-huh. What makes Katie Couric popular and in such demand? Is there so little talent available? Thank you, Ray from San Jose. What do you say, Richard?
Well, I don't know that I can recall all those questions. What makes Katie Couric popular is that she's cute, and she doesn't tax people's intelligence. Now, actually, my friend Bob Schieffer, who succeeded rather in the CBS Evening News,
is that a permanent thing or is it temporary?
He's fine. He's increased their viewership by almost a million viewers since he's been on, but they're going to let him go now for Katie Couric, and I think they're making a big mistake.
He's a very, very nice man.
Bob has what used to be known as gravitas.
Yeah, great. Oh, by the way, if you want to call a Saturday special on AM 1080 KSCO, it's the phone numbers, lines are open at 479-1080. Or 477-1340. You want to fax us? It's 475-2967. If you want to email me, it's mz@ksco.com. Let's go to Billy in Capitola, after which we're going to finally play some commercials. Okay, Billy, you're on.
Gentlemen, you know, there's one way in which the news business is unlike every other business in America, and that's that it actually has the most important responsibility, which is to keep the government honest. And it's business aspects have gotten in the way of its journalism aspects. In an effort to become bigger and to get more power and more stations, we see them rolling them all up together. The other thing we see that accompanies that is nobody makes the president tell the truth. The White House press corps asks a question, the president or the president's man doesn't answer it, moves on to the next question. What would happen if the White House press corps refused to go on if they would repeat the question of the man before them? The real issue for America today is that we have governments that don't tell us the truth but propagandize us. So now, more than ever, the press needs to do its job. I cried when I saw the movie about a time when the press was aggressive, when the press stood up to both its bosses and the politicians. Isn't that what's really important, and isn't that what we've lost?
I agree that that's what's important. I don't altogether agree with you that that the press is not performing that duty today. I think the press is doing the job it should be done.
We still don't have the answer to the truth about WMDs from out of the president's mouth. We have to hear it, dug up here and there. But again, the press does not bring up short the administration. We're being way too polite. The British press gets in their face, asks a tough question of that prime minister. No one does that with a president who's afraid to be asked under oath about 9/11, who needs Cheney next to him. It's embarrassing, and the press needs to point this up.
Okay.
You know, it's, as you point out, it's not about entertainment anymore. The press is, Katie Couric is there because she's entertaining. But we don't want that from the press. I don't want to hear about Natalie Holloway one more second money is destroying the political realities.
Couldn't
and
agree more.
Our democracy.
Some critic once described the American press as not arriving at the truth, but surrounding it. And I think, out of the press as a whole, I don't think there's any substantial lack of criticism of the President of the United States.
For sure. Okay, Billy, thanks for your call to the Saturday special. That opens up lines at 479-1080 or 477-1340. Jay, are you there? You there in the talk studio?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, let's run the commercials for last hour and this hour together. Kill the promos, please. We got an awful lot more to carry to go through. I will run Kay's commentary afterwards from here. So I appreciate it. Okay, thank you, Jay. We will be back in just about a few minutes.
You're not off.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangero. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangero family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Our Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both Gilda and I and my son Dino look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
Hi, I'm Dr. Guy Peabody. If fear is preventing you from seeing the dentist, listen to how we've helped others with sedation dentistry.
I'm Pat. Well, we had a consultation. He went over all my x-rays. Frankly, I was skeptical that he could get me numb or the treatments would be painless. And he prescribed a course of treatment and went into the office. And 5 hours later, I was out smiling and felt absolutely nothing. I would highly recommend Dr. Peabody to anybody that has any apprehension about a dentist. He's the man, and I'm a true believer. And the staff is fantastic.
We've helped hundreds of people wake up to a beautiful smile. Let us help you, too.
Call Dr. Guy Peabody at 457-0343. That's 831-457-0343. Find Dr. Peabody's sedation dentistry on the web at drpeabody.com or in the Yellow Pages. You, too, can wake up to a beautiful smile.
My name's Fred Simone. I've been a member of Not This Time Vet since we got organized at the beginning of 2005. I got involved when it was made public that Donna Jacob had been denied the right to march. My name's Fred Simone. I've been a member of Not This Time Vet since we got organized at the beginning of 2005. I got involved when it was made public that Donna Jacob had been denied the right to march in the first night parade. So I was one of the people who went down and picketed at first night with her. And then after that, we had a meeting where we decided that maybe it would be nice to have a parade because there hadn't been an Armed Forces Day parade in Santa Cruz, as far as I know, since the mid-60s, probably about 40 years. And I'm a Vietnam vet. Actually, I'm a retired Army officer. And one of the things I always wanted was a parade. You know, it sounds silly, but I really longed to have maybe recognition. this in just to march in a parade after my service was done. So we organized the parade. I must say we got excellent cooperation from the city, and it went very smoothly. The parade meant a great deal to older vets like me whose service had never been recognized. We need your financial support to make this year's parade happen. Please send a donation to Not This Time Vets, care of KSCO Radio. Thank you.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
The American dominant media, namely ABC, NBC, and CBS, have been shamelessly lying to us, and it's called the sin of omission. They have become networks of political manipulation instead of deliverers of honest news. They still remain very powerful, since one of them just hired a mediocre morning commentator for $13 million per year, proving they have more money than good judgment. Since George Bush became president over 5 years ago, these liberal networks, along with most but not all liberals, have never gotten over the fact that the Democrats lost the last two elections. In the first election, Al Gore used his clout as then vice president to create drive-by voting for thousands of illegals to vote for him as president with no questions asked. He still lost and never became president, thank God. The left do not lose gracefully, and when they lose, they fuss and moan and attack the opposition personally. In short, they have tantrums. The liberal media report every bad incident occurring in Iraq and omit all of the U.S. and Iraqi Army's victories, along with their endless bashing of President Bush. Their dishonest, reckless actions delight and embolden the enemy terrorists and prolong the bombings of our troops and innocent Iraqi citizens. The American media want us to fail in Iraq, and that is treason. After Afghanistan, world intelligence did believe that there were WMDs in Iraq and that Saddam Hussein was cruel and unstable enough to possibly use them. Except for France, Russia, and Germany, who were busy receiving billions of bribe dollars from the scoundrel Hussein from the oil for food scandal, the entire UN unanimously voted that we must go and disarm Iraq. Our entire Congress voted and agreed. Now they all have amnesia. When things are rough, all the Monday morning quarterbacks who never would have predicted that all the world's Islamic terrorists would converge in Baghdad to try to prevent democracy from taking hold, they're all complaining and blaming Bush for everything, constantly. How cowardly. Weaklings always search for scapegoats, instead of having the cojones to say, perhaps we all made some mistakes. Returning soldiers and visitors to Iraq do report that wonderful things are happening there, but the media refuses to report anything positive. Eventually, our troops will leave. The jury is still out about the direction in Iraq. More time will tell if the Iraqi people will have the will and the fortitude to create and maintain a democracy. It won't be easy. Kudos to our own troops, the best and the brightest, going there willingly and courageously to fight the Islamic terrorists in order to ensure they do not come here to our shores. Kudos also to the Bush administration for keeping us safe from terrorist attacks since 9/11. About the dominant media, shame on them and their dishonesty. May they self-destruct. For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay's Whirling.
Wow, heavy stuff. Yeah.
Doesn't mince words.
Yeah, right. So you did hear a little part of it anyhow. I was hoping to, I planned to run that that commentary from this location. But as it was, Richard and I got to listen to the last half of it on hold on the telephone. Yeah, that's my mom. I'm very proud of her. She, as you say, she doesn't mince any words at all. But anyhow, I think, Jay, are you there? I think we're...
yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I think we're back here on hour number two of the Saturday special. We ran those commercials, all right, which I didn't hear for some reason.
Yeah.
Is that right? So the commercials are all under... We're done with the commercials.
Good to go.
And we want to thank our sponsors. So let's get back into the program where we only have about... about 20 minutes left or so, 20, 23 minutes. And if you want to give us a call and talk about media with Richard Jenks, former president of CBS Broadcast Group, the phone numbers are 479-1080 or 477-1340. Gary in, I don't know where Gary is going to be our next caller, but you're on the air, Gary. Hi there.
Yeah, Live Oak, yeah.
It's Live Oak Gary, the man who President Reagan told to shut up.
Right. When I was trying to represent the people from this district, he didn't want to hear about his reversals in tax policy and all his positioning against Carter's CFR and Trilats and those appointees. He ended up appointing more. So.
Right.
Yeah, anyway.
I can't wait to hear what you want to ask or say to Richard.
Okay. There's two or three things. It'll be fairly quick, but it looks like you have a little bit of time here. One, I don't know if he's familiar with the... quote by John Swinton before a fellow New York journalist, where he said there's no such thing as an American independent press. He's talking to the journalist now. He says, you and I know it. There's not one of you here that dares write an honest opinion. And if you did and you knew beforehand, it would never appear in print. I am paid for keeping an honest opinion out of the paper I am connected with. Others, similar salaries and similar things, you'd be so foolish to publish on honest opinion, we'd be out in the streets looking for another job. The business of journalists is to destroy the truth, to outright lie, to pervert, vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, to sell his country. It is, you know it, and I know it, that the folly is toasting, you know, this is folly, toasting an independent press. We are the tools and vassals of the rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull our strings, and we dance. Our talents are those of a political prostitutes. But that's one New York journalist that's kind of famous. You can find it all over the Internet.
Okay, so...
also, earlier they were talking about Westbrook Pegler. Pegler was one of the few that came out and opposed the International Monetary Settlement Commission out there. There's also a Rockefeller quote that talks about how happy he is about the Times and the Time Magazine, Washington Post, before the Trilateral Commission in spiking information in a speech during 1991. And then Walter Cronkite, the last guy that, and I can understand why a listener likes him because he's, you know, kind of a globalist UN type of guy. But January of 2000, he said Americans are going to have to give up their sovereignty. He says within the next few years, we're going to have to change our basic structure of our global community. And we have to adopt to a new system governed by a democratic UN federation. So I think the press has been... working towards this new world order, and it's basically the very super rich and the major newspapers. You look, you know, like Ox and a lot of these other people that he mentioned, they're all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And I think this is a root of the massage
Gary,
of people. Yes.
Would you ask a question of Richard, please?
Okay. Don't you think that the major networks, they're spending all their time on, rape and, stories in the Caribbean are spiking key information that the American people need to know in order to keep their sovereignty and, debate the real issue of whether we're going to have a national government or a new world order?
Well, I think most of the abuse of news and dwelling for months at a time on obscure murders and disappearances is not so much a matter of the three major networks as it is of cable news, which has lots of time to fill, whereas the networks don't. On your earlier observation about the power of newspaper owners and moguls over the news, I think in my lifetime I've seen a great change. Somebody like Hearst really did run a shop in which he controlled every aspect of the news business. Somebody like Bill Paley did not. When I was president of the broadcast group, I had less influence on CBS News than the lowest paid news writer in our newsroom. We did not, management at CBS did not interfere with the news. I can tell you that with conviction. I can't speak for the other networks, but in general, I think they were well behaved too. Newsmen were very jealous during the, from the 50s and 60s on, were jealous about their prerogatives and very resistant to pressure from advertisers and pressure from owners. And I feel proud to be have been associated with that kind of business.
Okay. Hey, Gary, thanks for your call to the Saturday special. Great to hear from you. Here comes Pat in Santa Cruz. You're on the air on KSCO, Pat. Go.
Hi, MZ. Hey. This is Earth Day, and the guy that founded Earth Day was Senator Gaylord Nelson. And
From Wisconsin, I think.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. I'd like to read a very brief comment that he had, which relates specifically to McCarthyism by his account. And then I'd like to hear your guest's opinion of this. So can you...
How long was this? Is this reading thing?
I would think it would take 30, maybe 40 seconds.
Okay, go.
And this is a direct quote. Population, that means overpopulation, will be a major determinant of our future, how we live, and in what condition. Talk of it should not be muzzled by McCarthyism or any other demagogic contrivance. Rather, the issue should be brought forth and explored in public hearings and discussions precisely because it is a subject of great consequence. Moreover, Nelson said he was deeply troubled that, quote, rhetoric of this sort has succeeded in silencing the environmental and academic communities and has tainted any discussion of population immigration issues as politically incorrect. Now, that's the guy that founded Earth Day, and that's his comments about McCarthyism. I'd like to hear your guest's comments about it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Well, McCarthy and many others were not much concerned about the environment. I happen to think that we've made tremendous progress. Here in California, our air is better and our water is clearer and purer than it was 30 years ago as a result of activities associated with Earth Day and the activities of the Sierra Club and other organizations. It's interesting that when we have our elections here in California and there are propositions on the ballot, those relating to the public acquisition of land for parks and so forth are often the most heavily supported measures. So I'm, as one who thinks of himself as an environmentalist, I'm pleased with the progress. More must be done, but I'm in no way discouraged by what has happened.
Okay, we've got open lines at 479-1080 and 477-1340. It's the KSCO Saturday Special on your favorite radio station, AM 1080. KSCO, tell everyone you know about us. Richard Jenks is our special guest today on the Saturday Special. He's the former president of CBS Broadcast Group. And if you want to talk to him, give us a call at 479-1080, 477-1340, or fax us at 475-2967. I don't know if you've been up there, Jay, but we ought to get that fax machine maybe into the studio. So we'll know. We don't even have to remember to run up front. But if there are any faxes, let us know, and we'll go ahead and get you to read them. You can also email me at 479-4. Excuse me. You don't email a phone number, do you? You email mz@ksco.com. We're going to take a call on screen now. Who is this? You're on the air.
Hi, yes, it's Brother Darrell calling.
Hi, Brother Darrell. How are you?
Hey, I just wanted to talk to Richard about the difference between then and now, as I see it, in the news, and I've been listening pretty heavy to it for all my life. Is it now that people like Limbaugh and Savage and those different people are up front in their positions and their point of view. People like Cronkite, he wasn't. He tried to say that he was unbiased, but in every way that they presented the news back then, they presented the news with a bias, but it was an unacknowledged bias. Now today, Air America and whatnot have their political persuasions, but they're upfront about it. They're not masquerading it as neutrality or unbiased. And I'd like to see what you think of that.
Well, I generally agree with you. I think that the people who are attracted to the news profession are generally people who have some sort of instinct to wish to change the world for the better, in their view, whereas people who don't have that reformist instinct tend to become accountants, dentists, lawyers, and other rabble of that sort. I agree with you that newsmen generally were on the left. Repeated surveys have showed that the huge majority of them voted Democratic and have done so for several decades. That, to some extent, has changed, but not entirely.
And if I could follow up on that, as far as what Michael Zerling started the show with, the demographics of this country are still such that the people listening to talk radio or listening to the news, by and large, now I'm not trying to make a stereotype that applies to everyone, by and large, are centered around white males. And generally, people over, say, 35 years old. I would think that would go a long ways to explaining why he's not finding a great deal of support for liberal points of view, and why the mainstream news, presenting a soft socialism, I think that's what Hubert Humphrey would define himself as, a soft socialist, why they are not popular among that demographic.
One reason I think that people, that the liberal news community claims not to find bias in the news is because they're not looking at the right thing. The bias is exhibited not so much by your opinion about a subject, but by what about the subject you find important.
There you go. That's right.
Take an execution over here at San Quentin. The liberal will want to focus on the people who are standing all night with placards opposing the death penalty.
Right.
The conservative will want to focus on what did this chap do when he strangled or raped some person 20 years ago, and what is the justness of the penalty. So both accounts will be correct. The account of the crowd protesting the execution, the account of the history of the criminal. But since they're not both presented on the same program, usually, there is, to many people, an apparent bias.
Well,
do you have any comment on my point on the demographics of why it is that the mainstream is losing audience share and the Fox News types are increasing in market share is based partly upon what you just described and the demographics are trying to appeal to?
I think it's partly that and partly because, frankly, I think that the Fox News does a better job.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay, thank you, Brother Darrell. Wide open lines at 479-1080 or 477-1340. So if you wanna call, now's the time. The death penalty. We talked about some things. There's so many things we haven't talked about that we could have on this program. So I almost hope that there aren't any more callers because we pride ourselves in being a two-way interactive radio station here that encourages participation and discussion. I want to back up a little bit. Pardon me. Earlier when we started doing this talk radio soapbox, if you will, on the Monterey Salinas Santa Cruz radio station, it was much easier, much, much easier to get people to participate. And typically the Saturday special, we did interviews with special guests like we're doing today. But most of the time, much more often than not, we would select a controversial issue facing either the local community or the whole country and have competent and articulate spokespeople representing all, usually two points of view, but sometimes there were more. and have the people on duking it out. And I was Mr. Neutral. I usually had a pretty strong opinion one way or another, but I never let it out because I didn't figure that it was my role as a moderator to do that. It was my role was to be more neutral, and I always was, not always, but originally I was. And after a while, I started thinking, well, hey, why can't I have an opinion? So I started voicing an opinion even as a moderator, but I've always bent over backwards to encourage people with differing opinions, both from those guests that we had on and myself, to call in the radio station or be featured as a guest and so forth. And it's getting harder and harder and harder to get people who are not conservative to agree to be a guest on KSCO. Why is that, you think?
I don't know. On newspapers, let me just say, one of the first things I go to in a newspaper is the letters to an editor, to the editor, because they indicate more than anything else what the general intellectual tone of the newspaper and of its readers is.
Right.
And, for example, here in the Bay Area, I think that the Chronicle letters to the editor are dreadful. The equally liberal Marin Independent Journal over in Marin County, which is just as liberal, maybe more so than the Chronicle, has excellent letters. And I don't know why that is. Of course, they have an advantage.
When
you don't
say excellent or not very good, what do you mean?
Well, I mean,
thinking or
quality of, first of all, knowledge of the neutral facts of the issue under discussion. And then sensitive and thoughtful opinions. So, you know, but newspapers have an opportunity you don't have, MZ. They can review 20 or 30 letters and select the 10 best. You get calls in and you don't know in advance what the caller is going to say, unless you are familiar with the caller from a prior encounter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're right. We usually do know exactly what they're going to say. Speaking of callers, we're in the closing 6 minutes of the program. Let's go to Ms. Gloria. No, not Ms. Gloria, because Don from
Don
Perspectives. What'd you say, Jay?
Go to Don first.
Go to Don, yeah. Okay, Don from Perspectives.
Hello, it's Donald.
Oh, Donald. Hi, Donald.
It's Donald.
Yeah, have you got a promo of your show coming up?
No, but it will be with Dr. Biles and Dr. David Boyd, who is on Mercury Fillings.
Oh, okay. Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, there was a caller. It's an honor to be on here on the Saturday special, but I wanted to refer to a caller on the first hour that asked a question about the word news and where it came from. And I was watching my favorite channel, the History Channel, and a number of months ago there was a program on about the original broadcasting on TV of news. And I don't know if it was the Huntley-Brentley report that started it, but it was in the mid-50s, plus or minus a year or two. And the word news came from north, east, west, south.
That's what
I saw on the History Channel. I didn't just make it up.
Interesting idea. That rivals the old quip about news. Are there any news? No, not a single new.
Yeah, right.
But, news spelled G-N-U.
You know, before World War II, the news broadcasts on CBS and the other networks were 15 minutes, and that's all.
Oh, yeah.
And that was changed, first of all, because of Wallace Simpson and her romance with Edward. And that caused almost as many news stories as are now being caused by the lacrosse team at Duke.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when the war began in earnest and more people listened to Edward R. Murrow than had ever listened to any single individual in the history of mankind, it was a whole brand new story, and there came to be news groupies and, in any event, a large population addicted to news. But that was a result of the war, primarily.
Yeah.
Well, Don, thanks for sharing.
Donald, here's the whole enchilada.
Okay, Donald, you take care. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
He goes. Okay, here's Ms. Gloria. Hi, Ms. Gloria. Who's this?
It's Miss, M-I-S-S.
Oh, Miss Gloria.
Like they say in the South, you know, Miss Gloria.
Okay.
But in any case...
Welcome to the Saturday special.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity. I have three questions that have been on my mind for a long time. I listen to all the news. I'm an elderly person. I like to be up to date on what's going on. However, I notice more and more, number one, very poor language from the speakers. Number two...
Yeah, you know, the language has really gone to hell.
I called one of the main station, TV stations, and I asked him, will you please, the name is police officers, not cops, and ask your colleagues to do the same, being that my children's father was a police officer. But in any case, I just feel very poor, plus the other innuendos that they give. Second question is the news they get focused. Right now is Iraq. It doesn't matter if it's repetitious over and over. It's like the CD gets stuck over and over again. Sometimes they change the language a little bit, but the news is the same. It's like you said, there's nothing new. It's the same thing over and over again.
It sort of comes from the same sources.
We are a bunch of morons listening.
I think we learned that during the 2000 presidential election of 2000. Of 2000, I think, right? I mean, it all came from the same source. It didn't, right?
Yeah.
Anyhow.
The other question that I have is that you don't hear from any other part of the world. When they say world news, I said, oh my, they must have a very small world because we hear nothing from the other countries. It's either Iraq or it's... I'll give you an example. Whenever they speak about Brazil, it has to be either someone killed someone, a big disaster, but there's nothing positive. And goes on and on this way. Those are my three questions and the sort of comments, and I'm going to hang up so that I can hear the answers.
Okay.
I really appreciate the opportunity. And by the way, the lady that spoke, she's 100%. I love her.
Oh, you're talking about Kay?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, thanks for the kind words. Appreciate your call, and call again.
Thank you.
Just quickly, you can find nowadays on television, you can find the BBC News from Britain, and you can find the news of other nations if you look for it. And, of course, on the Internet, you can find the news organizations from many other countries. So we're luckier than we ever were in that respect.
I wish we would have had time to get into new media and prognostications, but we'll have to have you on again. If you'll come on, be great. Thanks very much for being with us, Richard Jenks.
My pleasure.
Had a wonderful time. And this program will be rebroadcast tonight between the hours of 10 p.m. and midnight on your favorite radio station or on demand at ksco.com or saturdayspecial.com. Okay, so see you next week. I think Rob Roberts is going to be the guest host. So there you have it. So
that's all, folks.
KSCO Santa Cruz, here's five.